It occurred to him then that this old man might recognize the chosen face. Some of the older Fremen here on Dune had known Duncan Idaho. The choice of features, which he had thought amusing, might have been a mistake, Skytail decided, but he dared not change the face out here. He cast nervous glances up and down the street. Would the old man never invite him inside?
"Did you know, my son?" the old man asked.
That, at least, was one of the countersigns. Skytail made the proper response, all the time keeping his eyes alert for any suspicious circumstance in his surroundings. He did not like his position here. The street was a cul-de-sac ending in this house. The houses all around had been built for veterans of the Jihad. They formed a suburb of Arakeen which stretched into the Imperial Basin past Timag. The walls which hemmed in this street presented blank faces of dun plasmeld, broken by dark shadows of sealed doorways, and, here and there, scrawled obscenities. Beside this very door, someone had chalked a pronouncement that one Barriss had brought back to Arrakis, a loathsome disease which deprived him of his manhood.
"Do you come in partnership?" the old man asked.
"Alone," Skytail said. The old man cleared his throat, still hesitating in that maddening way. Skytail cautioned himself to patience. Contact in this fashion carried its own dangers. Perhaps the old man knew some reason for carrying on this way. It was the proper hour, though. The pale sun stood almost directly overhead. People of this quarter remained sealed in their houses to sleep through the hot part of the day. Was it the new neighbor who bothered the old man? Skytail wondered. The adjoining house, he knew, had been assigned to Othame, once a member of Muad'Dib's dreaded Fadakan death commandos, and Bijaz, the catalyst dwarf, waited with Othame. Skytail returned his gaze to the old man, noted the empty sleeve dangling from the left shoulder, and the lack of a stillsuit. An air of command hung about this old man. He'd been no footslogger in the Jihad.
"May I know the visitor's name?" the old man asked.
Skytail suppressed a sigh of relief. He was to be accepted after all.
"I am Zal," he said,
giving the name assigned him for this mission.
"I am Farrakh," the old man said, "once Bashar of the 9th Legion in the Jihad. Does this mean anything to you?"
Skytail read menace in the words, said,
"You were born in Siege Tabor with allegiance to Stilgar."
Farrakh relaxed, stepped aside.
"You are welcome in my house."
Skytail slipped past him into a shadowy atrium. Blue tile floor, glittering designs worked in crystal on the walls. Beyond the atrium was a covered courtyard. A light emitted by translucent filters spread an opalescence as silvery as the white night of first moon. The street door grated into its moisture seals behind him.
"We were a noble people,"
Farrakh said, leading the way toward the courtyard.
"We were not of the cast out. We lived in no Graben village, such as this. We had a proper siege in the shield wall above Habanya Ridge. One worm could carry us into Kadam, the inner desert."
"Not like this,"
Skytail agreed, realizing now what had brought Farrakh into the conspiracy. The Fremen longed for the old days and the old ways. They entered the courtyard. Farrakh struggled with an intense dislike for his visitor, Skytail realized. Fremen distrusted eyes that were not the total blue of the Ibad. Off-worlders, Fremen said, had unfocused eyes which saw things they were not supposed to see. The Samuda music had stopped at their entrance. It was replaced now by the strum of a balisette, first a 9-scale chord, then the clear notes of a song which was popular on the Naraj worlds. As his eyes adjusted to the light, Skytail saw a youth sitting cross-legged on a low divan beneath arches to his right. The youth's eyes were empty sockets. With that uncanny facility of the blind, he began singing the moment Skytail focused on him. The voice was high and sweet.
"A wind has blown the land away, and blown the sky away, and all the men. Who is this wind? The trees stand unbent, drinking where men drank. I've known too many worlds, too many men, too many trees, too many winds."
Those were not the original words of the song, Skytail noted. Farrakh led him away from the youth and under the arches on the opposite side, indicated cushions scattered over the tile floor. The tile was worked into designs of sea creatures.
"There is a cushion once occupied in siege by Muad'Dib," Farrakh said,
indicating a round black mound.
"It is yours now."
"I am in your debt,"
Skytail said, sinking to the black mound. He smiled. Farrakh displayed wisdom. A sage spoke of loyalty even while listening to songs of hidden meaning and words with secret messages. Who could deny the terrifying powers of the tyrant emperor? Inserting his words across the song without breaking the meter, Farrakh said,
"Does my son's music disturb you?"
Skytail gestured to a cushion facing him, put his back against a cool pillar.
"I enjoy music."
"My son lost his eyes in the conquest of Naraj," Farrakh said. "He was nursed there, and should have stayed. No woman of the people will have him thus. I find it curious, though, to know I have grandchildren on Naraj that I may never see. Do you know the Naraj worlds, Zal?"
"In my youth I toured there with a troop of my fellow face dancers," Skytail said.
"You are a face dancer, then," Farrakh said. "I had wondered at your features. They reminded me of a man I knew here once."
"Duncan Idaho?"
"That one, yes. A swordmaster in the Emperor's pay."
"He was killed, so it is said."
"So it is said,"
Farrakh agreed.
"Are you truly a man, then? I've heard stories about face dancers that..."
He shrugged.
"We are Jadaka hermaphrodites," Skytail said. "Either sex at will. For the present, I am a man."
Farrakh pursed his lips in thought, then,
"May I call for refreshments? Do you desire water? Iced fruit?"
"Talk will suffice," Skytail said.
"The guest's wish is a command," Farrakh said,
settling to the cushion which faced Skytail.
"Blessed is Abu Dur, father of the indefinite roads of time," Skytail said,
and he thought, "There, I've told him straight out that I come from a guild steersman and wear the steersman's concealment."
"Thrice blessed,"
Farrakh said, folding his hands into his lap in the ritual clasp. They were old, heavily veined hands.
"An object seen from a distance betrays only its principal," Skytail said,
revealing that he wished to discuss the Emperor's fortress, Keep.
"That which is dark and evil may be seen for evil at any distance,"
Farrakh said, advising delay.
"Why?" Skytail wondered, but he said, "How did your son lose his eyes?"
"The Naraj defenders used a stone burner," Farrakh said. "My son was too close. Cursed atomics! Even the stone burner should be outlawed."
"It skirts the intent of the law," Skytail agreed, and he thought, "A stone burner on Naraj? We weren't told of that. Why does this old man speak of stone burners here?"
"I offered to buy Tlaelaxu eyes for him from your masters," Farrakh said. "But there's a story in the legions that Tlaelaxu eyes enslave their users. My son told me that such eyes are metal, and he is flesh, that such a union must be sinful."
"The principle of an object must fit its original intent," Skytail said,
trying to turn the conversation back to the information he sought. Farrakh's lips went thin, but he nodded.
"Speak openly of what you wish," he said. "We must put our trust in your steersman."
"Have you ever entered the Imperial Keep?" Skytail asked.
"I was there for the feast celebrating the Molitor victory. It was cold in all that stone, despite the best Ixion space heaters. We slept on the terrace of Alia's Fane the night before. He has trees in there, you know, trees from many worlds. We Bashars were dressed in our finest green robes and had our tables set apart. We ate and drank too much. I was disgusted with some of the things I saw. The walking wounded came, dragging themselves along on their crutches. I do not think our Muad'Dib knows how many men he has maimed."
"You objected to the feast?"
Skytail asked, speaking from a knowledge of the Fremen orgies which were ignited by spice beer.
"It was not like the mingling of our souls in the siege," Farrakh said. "There was no Tau. For entertainment, the troops had slave girls, and the men shared the stories of their battles and their wounds."
"So you were inside that great pile of stone," Skytail said.
"Muad'Dib came out to us on the terrace," Farrakh said. "Good fortune to us all," he said. "The greeting drill of the desert in that place."
"Do you know the location of his private apartments?" Skytail asked.
"Deep inside," Farrakh said. "Somewhere deep inside. I am told he and Chani live a nomadic life, and that all within the walls of their keep. Out to the great hall he comes for the public audiences. He has reception halls and formal meeting places, a whole wing for his personal guard, places for the ceremonies, and an inner section for communications. There is a room far beneath his fortress, I am told, where he keeps a stunted worm surrounded by a water moat with which to poison it. Here is where he reads the future.
Myth all tangled up with facts, Scartale thought.
The apparatus of government accompanies him everywhere, Farrakh grumbled. Clerks and attendants for the attendants. He trusts only the ones such as Stilgar, who were very close to him in the old days.
Not you, Scartale said.
I think he has forgotten my existence, Farrakh said.
How does he come and go when he leaves that building? Scartale asked.
He has a tiny thopter landing, which juts from an inner wall, Farrakh said. I am told he will not permit another to handle the controls for a landing there. It requires an approach, so it is said, where the slightest miscalculation would plunge him down a sheer cliff of wall into one of his accursed gardens.
Scartale nodded. This most likely was true. Such an aerial entry to the Emperor's quarters would carry a certain measure of security. The Atreides were superb pilots all.
He uses men to carry his distrans messages, Farrakh said. It demeans men to implant wave translators in them. A man's voice should be his own to command. It should not carry another man's message hidden within its sounds.
Scartale shrugged. All great powers used the distrans in this age. One could never tell what obstacle might be placed between sender and addressee. The distrans defied political cryptology, because it relied on subtle distortions of natural sound patterns, which could be scrambled with enormous intricacy.
"Even his tax officials used this method," Farrakh complained. "In my day, the distrans was implanted only in the lower animals."
"But revenue information must be kept secret," Scartale thought. "More than one government has fallen because people discovered the real extent of official wealth." "How do the Fremen cohorts feel now about Muad'Dib's jihad?" Scartale asked. "Do they object to making a god out of their emperor?"
"Most of them don't even consider this," Farrakh said. "They think of the jihad the way I thought of it, most of them. It is a source of strange experiences, adventure, wealth. This Graben hovel in which I live," Farrakh gestured at the courtyard, "it cost 60 liters of spice, 90 kantars. There was a time when I could not even imagine such riches."
He shook his head. Across the courtyard, the blind youth took up the notes of a love ballad on his baliset. 90 kantars, Scartale thought. How strange! Great riches, certainly. Farrakh's hovel would be a palace on many another world, but all things were relative, even the kantar. Did Farrakh, for example, know whence came his measure for this weight of spice? Did he ever think to himself that 1.5 kantar once limited a camel load? Not likely. Farrakh might never even have heard of a camel, or of the golden age of earth. His words, oddly in rhythm to the melody of his son's baliset, Farrakh said,
"I owned a kriss knife, water rings to 10 liters, my own lance, which had been my father's, a coffee service, a bottle made of red glass older than any memory in my siege. I had my own share of our spice, but no money. I was rich and did not know it. 2 wives I had, one plain and dear to me, the other stupid and obstinate, but with form and face of an angel. I was a Fremen naib, a rider of worms, master of the Leviathan and of the sand."
The youth across the courtyard picked up the beat of his melody.
"I knew many things without the need to think about them," Farrakh said. "I knew there was water far beneath our sand, held there in bondage by the little makers. I knew that my ancestors sacrificed virgins to Shai Hulud before Liet Kynes made us stop. I had seen the jewels in the mouth of a worm. My soul had 4 gates, and I knew them all."
He fell silent, musing. "Then the Atreides came with his witch mother," Scartale said.
"The Atreides came," Farrakh agreed. "The one we named Usul in our siege, his private name among us. Our Muad'Dib, our Mahdi. And when he called for the jihad, I was one of those who asked, 'Why should I go to fight there? I have no relatives there.' But other men went, young men, friends, companions of my childhood. When they returned, they spoke of wizardry, of the power in this Atreides' savior. He fought our enemy, the Harkonnen. Liet Kynes, who had promised us a paradise upon our planet, blessed him. It was said this Atreides came to change our world and our universe, that he was the man to make the golden flower blossom in the night."
Farrakh held up his hands, examined the palms.
"Men pointed to First Moon and said, 'His soul is there.' Thus he was called Muad'Dib. I did not understand all this."
He lowered his hands, stared across the courtyard at his son.
"I had no thoughts in my head. There were thoughts only in my heart, and my belly, and my loins."
Again the tempo of the background music increased.